This is Rocky Mountain Voices, powered by PodTech.
The same could be said for medicine. There's greater and greater combination of sensors with computer technology, with information technology in a single chip. So you could imagine walking into a doctor's office and he could screen for a half a dozen different or even more types of cancer while you're in the office getting your exam.
My name is Tom Minow, and I'm Chief Executive Officer of Lumera Corporation. I'm happy to bring you the 2007 Lumera Podcasting Series. This series of podcasts addresses a wide range of exciting developments in the field of nanotechnology, photonics, and groundbreaking effects they may have on the multi-billion dollar telecommunications, semiconductor, and bioscience industries. In this podcast, we are pleased to have Larry Dalton. Professor Dalton is a distinguished professor at the University of Washington who pioneered the electro-optic polymer technology, which is the foundation for Lumera's photonic modulators. He is the recipient of numerous prestigious scientific awards, and our scientists are fortunate to have a working relationship with a giant in this field. Thank you for participating in our podcast series, and now I'll turn it over to Todd.
This is Todd Wolfenbarger with the Lumera Podcasting Series, and I am here today with Dr. Larry Dalton, who is the George B. Kaufman Professor of Chemistry and Engineering at the University of Washington. Dr. Dalton, welcome to the Lumera Podcast this afternoon.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Speaking with you a little bit in the past, you have an interesting job in that every day you are trying to solve problems that would make most people just shrink. How did you become interested in what you're doing and what you're doing now?
Well, I grew up in the Sputnik era, and I realized early on the importance of technology for all aspects of our lives. Hopefully, the American Competitive Initiative, which was announced in the President's State of the Union address, will not only stimulate our economy, but also motivate our young people to pursue careers in science and technology. As noted in that initiative, this is really critically important for the future of the nation.
Have you seen, over the course of your career, a growing or a waning interest in young kids today in science?
Dramatically waning. It's a crisis situation. It's a great concern to all the federal agencies and professional societies. Not only do we have a waning interest from individuals born in the United States, but we have a serious problem that we've been unable to attract the individuals from underrepresented groups, women, blacks, Hispanics, into science and technology. So we've been for almost two decades importing our scientific workforce. As the economy has improved in China, that's no longer going to be an option.
Why do you think that is, that American kids have become less interested in science?
Well, they're very bright, and they look at the various types of career options available to them. And as you might guess, careers in business and in medicine and many other areas are more popular. One could argue many different reasons. One, science is very difficult and demanding. Two, you can't turn on television without seeing a medical or a legal show, you know, popularizing those professions. There are many, many different aspects to that.
That is interesting. As we talk about technology, sometimes technology feels further removed from people, and it's not often that you actually get to talk with someone who invented the technology you'll talk about. It's what makes talking to you especially interesting as we speak about electro-optic polymers. You know, for those who may be listening who don't fully understand what an electro-optic polymer is, tell us a little bit about what they are and how they came about and why they are useful today.
Let me set some perspective here. Electronics and photonics have enormous impact on our lives, but we pretty much take them for granted. We also seldom think that we have to routinely make transitions between information in the electronics and photonics domain. For example, you want to send a computer-generated Word document to a friend in another city. Well, you have to convert that electronic information in your Word document to photonic information to send it over the Internet, over fiber optic cables. This is where electro-optic materials come in. Such materials facilitate the transitioning between electronic and photonic domains. They basically are the materials that allow those two signals to interact with a unique electron distribution called pi electrons in organic materials, and this allows those two signals to talk to each other. also because electro-optics have a nonlinear effect. They function in the same way that silicon electronics does, in that they allow you to manipulate signals. And thus, you can do a lot of different types of device fabrications. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you can even do computing. For example, optical computing was one of the fantasies of a few years ago. And it's only recently become viable with new materials and concepts out of our research group.
And these special materials that allow for this to happen are, in essence, what constitute a polymer. That's correct, right?
Mm-hmm.
So why a polymer? Why this kind of material versus other kinds of technologies?
Well, currently, polymers permit greater bandwidth. That means they allow faster response, so more information can be handled per unit time. They permit lower voltage and power consumption, which is critically important because, for example, it allows you not to use things like amplifiers to boost up signals. And so it's going to allow a much more compact fabrication, and that can be particularly important for airborne and satellite applications where launch weight is important. They're lighter manufacturing flexibility. For example, you can make conformal and flexible devices. Conformal are basically shaped devices. So, for example, if you're building them, using them to build a collision avoidance radar for your car, you can actually just make it in the form of paint that goes on a portion of your car. They're amenable to environmental friendly manufacturing. There was an article in Environmental Health Perspectives on this, and they have the potential for lower cost.
That's fascinating. And you have been recognized in a list that would virtually fill this podcast in ways and that you've been recognized in areas that your expertise has specifically been asked to play a role in. I think maybe, you know, perhaps no other place than, you know, not too many people can say that they have been a candidate for the Nobel Prize. What's that like?
Well, actually, scientists and engineers like myself don't spend time thinking about prizes. I'm actually more proud of my Federal Advisory Service for the National Science Foundation, Department of Defense, Department of Energy, and NIH. For example, yesterday I agreed to serve on the Nanotechnology Advisory Group of the President's Council of Advisors on Science and Technology. I think most of you are familiar with nanotechnology, certainly the business community, so it's pretty easy to see why the right decisions in this area will be important, and I'm happy to actually play a part in actually formulating our government policy. At UW, I end up directing the National Science Foundation Science and Technology Center on Materials and Devices for Information Technology Research, and the DARPA Supermolecular Photonics Program, among other research programs. Actually, these two programs I just mentioned are quite unique in that they're sort of almost poster childs for successful technology transfer, which is becoming an increasing concern, not only for business, but also for the federal government.
I believe that some of the, where you had started at the University of Washington also has turned into or evolved into your relationship with Lumera as well. Tell us a little bit about your association with the company and why you think the company is doing interesting things today.
Okay. Well, Lumera, first let me talk a little bit about my association. Lumera licensed intellectual property generated by various professors at UW, including myself. And also they have sponsored research at UW and other universities, for example, Penn State. Universities don't sell products, and so companies like Lumera play an absolutely critical role in moving university-generated research to the marketplace. Moreover, they have to solve a lot of problems in device design and fabrication in getting a product to the market. Plus, they've got to deal with all issues of marketing, delivery, quality assurance of final products. And so companies like Lumera, in actually getting federally sponsored, university-generated technology to the marketplace. Obviously, as we've learned from Japan and the MIDI Association, things seem to work best when there's a government-university-industry collaboration. And in fact, that was one of the key items of the fantastic success that the Japanese had in many areas, from automotives, from automobiles to display technologies. And if we want to export that in the U.S., we have to have participation from all three segments, and Lumera obviously represents a very important segment.
Of all the things you've talked about today, maybe I invite you to go out on a limb a little bit now and talk about if you could project forward in some way a decade ahead. What will this sort of technology, how is it going to change the way we live?
Well, electro-optic technology could well play a critical role in next-generation defense, computer transportation, medicine, entertainment, and information technologies. For example, information technology and energy technology are two of the three largest components of world economy. The other large component is agriculture. Electro-optic technology is involved with both of these. Broadly, with information technology being a critical component of a number of devices involved in IT, and also in energy, in the sense of integrating energy with information technology. For example, a major program of the Department of Energy is called GridWise, which is the monitoring of energy production, storage, distribution, and utilization. The same could be said for medicine. There's greater and greater combination of sensors with computer technology, with information technology in a single chip. So you could imagine walking into a doctor's office and he could screen for, you know, a half a dozen different or even more types of cancer while you're in the office getting your exam. Basically, what you see in the future is you see electro-optic technology in your home, in your car, in your cell phone, in your personal computer, in your workplace, along the highway as you're driving there. If you think about the last century, we were really dominated by the great advances in electronics, and particularly in the latter part of the century when we had silicon electronics.
Right.
And, of course, the telephone communication was transformed by the introduction of fiber optics. Well, we've really entered an issue, an era now where we're integrating photonics and electronics, in fact, and next-generation computer chips will be integrated chips. So you exploit the best of both of these signal domains. And to do this, you've got to essentially instantaneously go back and forth between the domains. Also, anytime you have an electro-optic device, you have a sensor. And you have a device that can do many of the nonlinear functions that are typically done in silicon photonics. So it'll become about as ubiquitous as silicon photonics today. So it will be just a normal part of all of our lives. And I assure you that our homes, our cars, our workplaces are all going to be transformed. And in fact, in the Department of Defense right now, essentially we're going through a retrofit of all planes, ships, land vehicles to make these hybrid vehicles. And so we're really changing the way we live. So as rapidly as things changed in the last 20 to 30 years, the pace of change will even be greater in the next 20 to 30 years.
If those who are listening to this podcast today wanted to learn more about you or your work with polymers, where would they find out more?
Well, there are two websites that they could go to. One is my personal website, which is https://dept.washington.edu/EOOPTIC, that's EOOPTIC.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one is the website for the National Science and Technology Center on Information Technology Research, which is http://stc-mditr.org.
That's terrific, and we want to thank Professor Larry Dalton, a global expert in electro-optics, for taking time out today and participating in the Lumera podcasting series. Thank you very much, Professor Dalton.
You're welcome.
This has been a Rocky Mountain Voices podcast. Visit us on the internet at www.rockymountainvoices.com.